The following presentation is brought to you by the Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to television and film scriptwriter and producer Drew Chapman, whose credits include the miniseries, The Assets, and the indie film Standoff. He's just published his first novel, The Ascendant, and it's a wild ride that gets crazier with every chapter. Stick around, but don't trust anyone.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you by Amazon.com, Audible.com, and 1-800-DIAL-DJs. Please stop by the website, MrMedia.com, click on our advertisers, support the show. And remember, there's more than 1,000 interviews available at MrMedia.com. We've been doing this since February 2007. Hope you'll find something you like. And thanks for listening.
Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of undercover angels, I mean agents, who want to win your confidence with their bodies and rule your mind with unethical life choices in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. You may have to suspend a bit of disbelief to swallow one of the earliest conceits of The Ascendant, that mega super genius, every time I hear super genius, I think Wile E. Coyote. So I'll start that over again, and I will not think of Wile E. Coyote this time. You may have to suspend a bit of disbelief to swallow one of the earliest conceits of The Ascendant, that mega super genius Garrett Riley could ever get past his distaste and hatred for America's armed forces after what they did to his brother. But once you get past that little quagmire, it's smooth sailing in Drew Chapman's wild ride through Chinese-American relations, international intrigue, and an undeclared internet war, and so much more. Over the last few years, this show has hosted a growing number of writers who, like Drew Chapman, first cut their teeth in film and TV. These guys, including Terry Hayes, who wrote I Am Pilgrim, Nick Antosca, of The Girlfriend Game, and Daniel Pine, who wrote A Hole in the Ground Owned by a Liar, have all hit the ground with terrific first novels that leave the reader begging for more. Now, the cinematic quality of these books comes across loud and clear, and it's obvious that the author's backgrounds in writing, first for the eye and the ear, brings great benefits to those of us who still like to read word by word, line by line. Now, if you like great espionage thrillers packed with almost incomprehensible danger on a global scale and no shortage of action, stay tuned for my interview with novelist Drew Chapman. And then go order his first book, The Ascendant. Drew Chapman, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. And congratulations on The Ascendant. The only word I could think of was it was a rocket of fiction. I mean, it just, boom, takes you and it really takes you on quite a ride.
Well, you know, that's how I meant it to be. I wanted it to be one of those books where you just, you know, first page, you're like hooked, and then you just keep going, turn, till you get into the end. I love those kind of thrillers. I mean, not every kind of book, but a thriller like that always just has me.
I agree. I'm the same way. And I like the chapters are fairly short. So, I mean, you just keep booming through it and you're looking for an opportunity. Okay, I need to put it down for a little while. I have to go down with my life and I'll come back to it. But really, you just want to keep reading because the twists are really good too.
Well, that's what a reader wrote to me. She said, you know, the problem with those short chapters is you just think, well, it's late at night and I can just read one more, and then you read one more and one more and one more. So
that's exactly what it is. How does a guy like yourself move from the screen to the page in this manner? Is it difficult? Is it, you know, and why?
Well,
I guess
there's a story behind it. Actually, I was under contract to write a pilot for a network, for a broadcast network, unnamed broadcast network. And I had, they sort of hire you for like a year. And it's what we call a blind script deal, in which they just want to work with you and you come to them with ideas. And I knew that I couldn't sell them anything for 6 or 7 months. And so I started to think, what I do is I go through and I start to think about what I'm going to try to come up with for their, you know, for a show for them. And the idea for The Ascendant had been kicking around in my head for quite a while. And I didn't know exactly how I wanted to approach it. And then I sort of started thinking about it as a television show. Then I thought, you know, this is too sort of quirky, subversive, too political. The main character is too much of, let's, you know, a jerk, let's just say kindly.
I was thinking of calling him a dick, but let's go with a jerk.
Okay, well, if, you know, dick is fine. And I thought, well, it'll never make it to, you know, network television. So, and I just, you know, I thought, this is the thing. I should write this as a novel. And, you know, I mean, I've always loved big thrillers, Clancy and Lee Child and, you know, even like classic Bourne books or just I find them so much fun. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, let's turn it into that. We have a really sort of a great, as you said, subversive main character, a guy who, you know, both wants to sort of help his country but can't stand his country at the same time. And I thought, oh, that's a great, fun, modern character. So many people can, you know, sort of hook up with that. You know, you both love your country and can't stand what it does. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to write this as a book. And my original idea was I would just write it as a book and self-publish it. I thought I would never try to make it. I would just do whatever I wanted. I wasn't going to worry about other people's opinions. I wasn't going to worry about editing. I was just going to write this. I was going to digitize it, and I would put it up on Amazon or Apple, and I would just charge 99 cents. And if the only people who read it were like friends of my mother, fine. You know, I like friends of my mother, and that would be just great. But then it sort of went, I mean, it's a longer story, but eventually it wound up with the publishers and they wanted to put it out there. So I said yes, because I'm a complete whore. And if you offer me money, I will do it.
Well, so what I'm curious about is let's go back to that network that offered you the blind script deal. So they basically paid for your time, right, to write this? And did you ever produce something for them?
Oh, no, they didn't pay for what they do. They're not paying for your time. They're just – they're making you exclusive. You can't go work for somebody else.
Oh, I see.
I went and I gave them a project. And I've worked for them since, and I worked for them before. And they have no interest in making this as a television show. It's just not their style. So
too bad.
Well, I sold it to Fox.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. No, the book is set up at Fox, and I'm going to write it as a TV pilot. And we'll see whether they actually make it or not, but it's, you know, they've hired me to turn it into a television show. And, you know, the issue is always, will a big network like Fox allow you to make something as sort of out there? As you said, there's, you know, it's a wild ride. It's political. He's subversive. He's a dick. Are they really going to let you make that happen on primetime television? I have no idea, but the most I can do is try.
Well, now that you mentioned that it's Fox, I'm thinking, you know, the network that does The Following, which is really completely different than anything, and then also did 24 and is bringing back 24. It would seem like the perfect network to do this.
Yeah, and the people who brought you The Simpsons, and, you know, I mean, talk about subversive. That's like the most subversive show on the history of the planet.
True.
So, yeah, if there's a television network out – so. When I thought about, after I'd written it, because I, you know, I mean, I work in television all the time, so I know all the players and they know me. I thought, well, what broadcast network of the big four, who would I actually want to sell it to? And they were the only people who I thought would make sense, mm-hmm. who would everybody else would be cable or, you know, premium or something like that. But we never got that far. So we just – the guys at Fox read it and loved it, and they wanted to at least give it a shot.
Well, so I have to ask you a question that I guess is probably a little too inside baseball for most people. But as a writer myself, I'm kind of curious about this. So you created The Ascendant. You created the series and the characters as a book. You sold it to Fox into the medium that you're more comfortable with. How did you make out in terms of the rights and – Do you retain some control on The Ascendant that maybe you did not have in previous projects for television?
You mean because it comes from my book,
yeah,
do I obtain more control over the course of the television series?
Yes.
Maybe a little bit, but not really, because in general, if you create a show, if you write a pilot for a network, mm-hmm. It's your show. I mean, ultimately, the people at the network, if they decide, you know what, we want it to be a different lead character, or we're going to put it on a submarine or whatever, you know, if they decide that that's what they're going to do, they're going to do it. It doesn't matter who you are. You could be Barack Obama writing it. They're going to change it. So in that sense, ultimately, they run the show. But it is my television show, and they hire me to come up with the idea. But really, when they hire you as a TV writer, they're hiring you to keep the show going. Mm-hmm. They want you to do the work. They don't want to have to – they want to like read the scripts and say yes, no, yes, no. But television is too much of a rat race and too much work for them to like get too involved. They're hiring creators, and I'm the creator. So in general, it's – you know, that's
and,
the way it
works. And TV is very much a showrunner's domain. Would you be the showrunner of The Ascendant? Is that the idea?
You know, the show that I just did, the assets for ABC, I was the showrunner on that. Mm-hmm. That's the first time I've been a showrunner. Mm-hmm. You know, I probably could be the showrunner on The Ascendant. Whether I would or not is, you know, it's questionable. It's really hard work. Like, there's no harder job in television than being a showrunner. It's 24 hours a day, and it's an amazing amount of pressure. So in some ways, it's better to be the creator and an executive producer and to have a showrunner at your side. Mm-hmm. And the showrunner, male or female, just sort of – they help you guide it, and they take a lot of the pressure off. They mm-hmm. do a lot – because showrunning is – you have to worry about your actors and production and just budget and all the stuff that – I mean, it's kind of fun for a little while. But, you know, you just – I mean, it's – whoa, it's really exhausting.
Yeah.
And – ultimately, it's not what I want to do. I would like to just continue to write the books and in parallel write the television show. So if I could do those two things, you know, that'd be great.
Is it, last question about that, I guess. Is
you can ask as many as you want.
Well, I want to talk to you about the book. But is the pilot for the 2014 or 2015 season, I'm guessing? Or so, are they rolling? They're not even following pilot season anymore, are they?
Well, there's the answer. So pilots for your audience, pilot season usually for a writer starts in the summer. You sell your ideas, you write them in the fall, you hand it in at Christmas. They decide if they're going to shoot them in January, and then they shoot them in the early spring. They decide which ones they're going to put on the air in the late spring, and you work all summer to get it on in the fall. Hmm. But really it's a kind of chaotic and nutty schedule that a lot of the big networks and all of the cable networks are trying to get away from. And Fox specifically asked that this project be what we call off cycle. So that means that there is no set schedule for when this would be on the air, which for me is fantastic. It's a game changer for a writer, because that schedule of pilot season is so nutty and kind of irrational. But writing off schedule, off cycle is just, you know, it's liberating. You can take your time. You can figure out when you have a problem, you go, you know what, let's just stop the process. I need to figure this out. Let's take a couple of weeks and figure out what the problem is here. And then you go back and you fix the script. And I think this is the first time I've done it. I think the process will be sort of more sane and lead to a better product.
Cool. I guess I'm going to ask you another question. How far along are you, or have you started the pilot?
I'm in the there's steps. So there's like what we call an arena document, which is like three or four pages of giving the broad generalization of what the show is going to be. Then there's an outline where you outline what the pilot's going to be, and that's like anywhere from 8 to 15 pages. And then once you're past that step, you start writing the pilot. And so I am about to hand in an outline.
Oh, okay.
So I'm in the middle step.
Cool. And will the TV series, the pilot, will it follow the first book, or will it start out with a different adventure, so to speak?
So it starts with the idea is that the first it's not going to be a 22-episode season. We're hoping it'll be more of a 10 to 13 episode, which, again, is much saner. Mm-hmm. And that the first season would follow the book generally, and that then the paths would kind of diverge from there. So the books could be their one thing, and then the series could be another. A little bit like that show also on Fox, Bones, mm-hmm. which is from a book, a series of mysteries. And they really now have nothing to do with the books. They're entirely separate. But in the beginning, they were closer. And they sort of they go off, and which is kind of how, I mean, that's what I would like to have happen, because then they both have, they take on lives of their own, mm-hmm. and they can kind of cross-reference each other. But it wouldn't be like the Harry Potter movies, you know, where it's so faithful to the,
right.
First of all, we should all be so lucky to, you know, sell Harry Potter novels. But just so that they both can be fresh. You know, I think the hardest thing when you're writing a series, either in television or books, is to keep the ideas fresh mm-hmm. and different. And if you let them go off on their own, then you can sort of stay fresher. Again, different than, for instance, Game of Thrones, which is from these books that have been out for a long time, so you can stick to the books.
And just for the record, folks, not a Bones guy, never seen the show, believe it or not, and I'm more of a Zoe Deschanel than an Emily Deschanel. That's all. Just want to say, you know, just want to get that in. So let's come back to the book. How is the process of writing your first novel different than writing a script for film or TV?
Well, it's incredibly liberating. You know, there are no rules. And you just there's just these arcane rules in writing a screenplay, you know, first act, second act, you know, reversals, character arc, all this kind of stuff. But for a book, you get to throw that all out of the window. You know, you can have all these different POVs, and you can jump around in time and place. And that was wonderful. That was really, really liberating. That said, I'm such a structure guy. I'm such a plot guy that when I was addressing the book, I did it in very much the same way that I write a screenplay. I laid out the plot and intricate detail in cards and an outline beforehand so that I knew exactly where I was going, so that I knew the end was going to be this before I ever started writing. And in a way, that's the hardest part for me, is the thinking, figuring out. The actual writing is much simpler. It's much easier for me. But man, figuring out where stuff is going to go, I'm so anal about that stuff. I have to know. I'm so impressed by writers, novelists, who just sit down and they start and they just wander off wherever the characters take them. I'm not that guy. I wish I were.
Well, and I mean, obviously it worked for you. The other guys that I mentioned have been on the show who've moved from film and TV into novel. I think it's a very effective training ground, and I don't think it's been explored that much in previous years. Maybe it's the nature of the changing nature of Hollywood and the business that you guys are looking at these other kind of options, but I mean, for an adventure or a thriller, it seems to be great training ground to write a novel.
Oh, it's fantastic, because for a lot of reasons. But I think the main one is that television trains you to think about what's going to happen next. Television is about, okay, and then what? And mm-hmm. then what? And then what? And it doesn't matter if it's, you know, a procedural or like a love story, a soap opera, whatever it is, you have to know what's going to happen next. You have to have the idea. You have to come up with fresh ideas. As soon as those ideas are not fresh, your show falls apart. Mm. And that's the same thing for a book. That said, I think that, and this is the mad scientist in me, my crazy, you know, nutty theories, I feel like all these different mediums, television, movies, books, audiobooks, streaming, your show, they're all kind of weirdly blending mm-hmm. in a way. The formats are mattering less. And what's mattering more is the storytelling. And, you know, like House of Cards on Netflix is a classic example. They really think of House of Cards as a long movie. And that's how they view it. And, you know, my book is in an audiobook now. And if you listen to my book, is it still a novel? I mean, I don't even know. I mean, I guess it's some sort of weird philosophical question, but to me, it's somebody telling you a story in a headset. And so I think the answer is that what television teaches you to do is to tell a story well, efficiently, effectively. And that's what I tried to do with The Ascendant.
Now, at this point, if this was House of Cards, you would turn a little bit to your left and right. Talk to the camera and explain.
Not in a Southern accent, I would say.
And say, now, I haven't forgotten about you.
That's right. But then I get to go have sex with, what's her name?
Robin Wright Penn?
There you go. So it all changes after that.
Yeah, I don't think. Well, that's just my preference. Like I said, I'm more of a Zooey Deschanel. I'd be more interested in if she was a character in my. Never mind. Oh, I completely lost my track. Now, what I wondered about though is that did you because and maybe this is different in your experience. TV and film tends to be a very collaborative medium where you're. You know, you go in knowing that you're going to be rewritten or you're going to be rewriting with people or something. Did you keep having this feeling that you needed to look over your shoulder and writing the novel and, okay, when's the guy going to come in here and tell me how he's going to rewrite this for me?
Well, you know, it was interesting. In a way, yes, because you do rely on that. I mean, I so rely on giving my work to people and saying, what do you think? Where could it be made better? So I'm a big believer in rewriting. So when even in the book, after the first draft, I looked at it and I was like, okay, this is a piece of crap. Now I need to really make it a book, you know. And that's what I do. I turn out crap and then I go through and I fix it and it gets better and better and better. And I, you know, I don't pretend to write a perfect first draft. It's not even close. Mm-hmm. So I was always thinking about that. What was wonderful in terms of the book was when we sold it to Simon & Schuster, I have this wonderful editor who came in not to make the book conform to other books that Simon & Schuster puts out, but to make the book better in and of itself, mm-hmm. as its own entity. So like if you're handing in a script to wherever, HBO, Showtime, they're trying to make that script make sense to their audience in their world. But that's not what my editor did. She just wanted it to be the best book in and of itself, and that was fantastic. So her editing, you know, made it much, much better.
Cool.
It was wonderful.
So let's go even further back now. Before the book, how did you learn to write screenplays? I mean, did you get specific training for that? And then when you decided to start on a novel, I wondered if there was any particular training or anything that you put yourself – boot camp or anything you put yourself through for that?
From the absolute earliest moments in my life, as I wanted to be two things, a basketball player or a writer. Mm. And basketball obviously did not work out. So, I mean, if you could see how tall I was, you would get it. So I always wanted to be a writer. I worked in journalism briefly, and coming to screenwriting, I was sort of self-taught, and then a specific screenwriter sort of took me under her wing and showed me how to work out the beats of writing a screenplay, mm-hmm. how to really, you know, just the essentials. And that took me a couple of years of figuring out writing bad scripts, having them rejected, trying to make them better, going forward, until finally you kind of learned and figured it out. Hmm. So that was my proving ground for that. And then I had never written a book. What I wanted to do, like I said, I read voraciously all the time. And so I read everything. It's not like just thrillers. I read midlist fiction, nonfiction, whatever it is. But I really made a study of the books, the thrillers that I love, specifically like Lee Child novels lately, because I feel like he's sort of the gold standard of the people writing those kind of thrillers. And sort of taught myself through that. But one of the reasons that I made it a book the way it is, the way it page turns, is that I don't, you know, screenwriting can be incredibly frustrating in that you get, you know, one out of every 10 of your pieces actually on the air. And that's always painful. And people had always loved the way that my screenplays were written. That was always a big thing. They were like, God, it's just fantastic the way you write these things. We're not making it. Thanks for nothing. And I was like, okay, great. So you really like the writing, but it's a piece of crap. So I thought, well, what if I could sort of inject that feeling into a book, that sense, that page-turner quality, that cinematic quality of the screenplay, but make it a book and make it, you know, and do the things that made it a book. And so that first draft that I did sell to Simon & Schuster felt a little probably thin in the world of books, and the editor made it more of a book, and that was wonderful. And I think book two will be even more so.
One of the things that really, besides the action, that really drives this book is this the main character, the Ascendant himself, Garrett Riley. Where do you come up with a guy like that? Did you know somebody who was as big a prick as he was, or is it an amalgamation of Hollywood people? What are we dealing with here?
Well, it's interesting. He's an amalgamation of a number of people. A little bit of myself in there, but I'm nicer than that, I hope. But one of the sort of sparks, and the character's not based on this guy at all, but one of the sparks for me was, do you remember the guy who played cornerback for the Arizona Cardinal? You're not a football guy.
I'm not an Arizona Cardinal guy.
Okay. His name, it's totally just blown out of my mind. Anyway, he quit NFL football and he became an Army Ranger. And he was sent to Afghanistan.
Pat Tillman.
Pat Tillman.
All right.
So Pat Tillman was sent to Afghanistan. He was killed by friendly fire. And I was watching a video clip of his funeral. And at his funeral, there were all these important politicians. John McCain was there. A lot of people were there. It was in Arizona. And they're all making these speeches. And then Pat Tillman's younger brother got up. I think his name was Richard. And he made a speech. And he had a Budweiser in his hand. And he was on camera. And he was clearly wasted. And he said, you know what? None of you people know my brother. You have no idea why he fought. You have no idea how he was killed. He's not with God. He didn't believe in God. He's dead. And there were curses through this whole thing. I guess I can curse on your thing. It's
yes,
not on this.
Absolutely.
He was like, you fucking have no fucking idea. He's fucking dead. And just blah, blah, blah. He was like, it was riveting. You were like, wow, such, so fascinating. He was so mad. And yet, he was clearly proud of his brother. Mm-hmm. He himself was a patriot. He loved his country, and yet he had been totally fucked over by the army, by his country, and now these politicians were telling him, you know, they were using his brother for their own purposes, and they still do. And I thought, that's fascinating. What an interesting bifurcation of your personality. When you talked about this sort of the suspension of disbelief of the beginning of the story, that here's this guy who hates the military, and yet he's going to do it, to me, that's not suspension of disbelief. That is the dichotomy that so many people feel. People who are in the military, when you talk to people in the military, they're like, love my country. Man, do I hate the Marines.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's a tough business. They're putting you out there to get shot, and you have to buy into it. And if you don't, the moment you stop buying into it, you are screwed. And so I just thought, that is so fascinating. What a great mix. And then in terms of the numbers and bond trading, that's just my own obsession. So he's, you know, I am fascinated by Wall Street, by economics, by the flow of money through our economy. I spend days sitting on bond trading desks with people, just doing research, listening to how they talk, watching how they do everything. That's my bugaboo I really wanted to write a thriller that wasn't just about people shooting each other. That was about numbers.
Putting this in context of the Tillman case, I would agree then it's not a suspension of disbelief at all. But the reason I said that at the top was that as I was reading, you know, maybe the first 50 pages of the book, I was thinking you've worked really hard to build up the case that the army is a bunch of assholes, and that Garrett Riley's brother, whatever happened to him, it was wrong, and something stinks there. And
right.
Then for him to the way he finally comes around to doing work for the military, and I hesitate. I don't want to give anything away here as to where that goes, but that was why I said you need to suspend disbelief a little bit, only because you would work so hard to make it seem incredibly unlikely that he would ever do that.
Right.
I thought that was interesting. Now, did you You just mentioned that you did research on bond trading and that kind of thing. Was there any pressure that you felt to stick to likely intelligence gathering issues in terms of what could happen and what would happen? Or did you just go, again, you know, there were no rules. You could just create a scenario.
Intelligence gathering, you mean?
What was possible, what was not possible in terms of...
Oh, I always tried to stay within the realm of what was possible. I talk to a lot of people who do, because I'm in Seattle, I have these sort of tech connections all over the place. In fact, that was one of the ideas for the original idea for the book, especially with China, because I knew all these Microsoft people who kept getting sent over to China and coming back with tales of like, oh my God, you would not believe how they hack into anything that we bring over there. And it's like a war, you know. They won't let you bring your own computer from Seattle to Beijing. They hand you a sterile computer and they go, take this, because if you take your own, everything on it will be corrupted or stolen. So, and they do, and that's how they work it. And I thought, wow, that's like amazing. It's like war. It is literally war. They say the minute you walk into a computer, into a hotel, you log on, boom, they're in. And so in terms of that kind of intelligence gathering, I've tried to make it as realistic as possible. Talk to guys who are encryption experts and how to, you know, how do you send messages that nobody can get and how do you break them? And, you know, this was all written, the original drafts were all before the whole NSA thing and Edward Snowden. So when that broke, I was like, oh, well, that's a whole nother layer to add on.
Have you, as we're talking, we're in, I guess, week two of this, the Ukraine crisis, where Russia has pitted itself against the rest of the West. And it was interesting to me to be reading your book and finishing your book simultaneously with that going on, because I kept thinking, okay, where is the ascendant in all this? You know, because it seemed, if you substitute Russia for China, you almost got the sense that they were trumping something up because they're hiding something else. Or at least now that I've read The Ascendant, I'm very suspicious of stuff.
You mean that the Russians are?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Well, so that's, to me, that is so fascinating. I'm just such a news, global politics junkie. And I feel like it's never what they tell you. It's, and I don't want to sound completely like Area 51 paranoid. I'm not. I think that they have to tell you something slightly different because they need lots of different narratives of why, and they being any country, ours included, you need a narrative of what you're doing that makes sense. You need a narrative that's emotional. You need a narrative that gets you what you want. And the Russians, oh my God, I mean, they'll just say anything. I mean, it's really astonishing. So I spent the fall in Eastern Europe this past fall shooting the assets, all these AS projects. So we were in Lithuania, which is right up against the border of Belarus, which is essentially Russia. And man, the level of hatred, paranoia, bitterness, just the how the Lithuanians feel about the Russians and the Russians about the Lithuanians, and oh my God, I mean, it is just a cesspool. And that is actually where I'm going in book two.
Oh, great.
I mean, I was there. I did all this research. I was in Eastern Europe. It's like, you might as well use it. It's totally fascinating.
Wow. Well, so before we went live, which took a while, we had a lot of time to talk, you mentioned, as I had hoped, that there will be a sequel to The Ascendant. Do you have a schedule for that at this point? Do we know when that will happen?
Well, I'm writing it. Simon & Schuster would like to have it out in January of 2015. Remains to be seen. I'm, you know, every minute I spend with you is a minute I'm not writing the book.
Now, so. Now you tell me. Now that we wasted 45 minutes up front with technical problems.
No, I need the break.
Don't bill me for your time. I can't afford it.
No, Simon & Schuster will send
you. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, no, I'll get it done. We'll have a project. They, you know, they would like a book a year.
Wow. That
seems kind of...
John McDonald?
A little bit. And it also seems like, you know, you want just a good book, whatever it takes, however much time it takes, you want the book to be good, and then you worry about it. So I'm just trying to focus on it being good. But it is obvious to me that these sort of bestsellers are not made with one book. You obviously have to, you know, you need a whole shelf of Drew Chapman books. So people pick up number four and then they go back and read one and two and like that. And so it is, oddly, I thought it was going to be totally different than television, but in fact, it's very similar to television.
Well, when you do a series, yeah, I could see that. A series of books, a series of television shows. Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, folks, listen, you can tell I really like the book. I definitely encourage you to buy it. And you can find Drew Chapman's first book, The Ascendant, in great bookstores everywhere. Or you can order it. I mean, you can have it right now at MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. If you're watching this on MrMedia.com, below the video, right over there somewhere, maybe where Drew's thumbs are crossed. Yeah, that's it. Don't point down with your thumb. That means you don't like it. That's better. And no, you don't want to point there either. I think that's probably not a good idea. So anyway, somewhere down there is the cover of the book. You can click on it right now. It'll take you to Amazon. You can have the book. You can have the book immediately via ebook, or you can have it shipped to you within a day or so. So do that. Have the book. Drew, are you available? Do you have a website for yourself or for the book? Are you Twitter, Facebook, any of that kind of stuff?
Sure, sure. The website is drewchapmanauthor.com, and Twitter is Drew Chapman. It's at Andrew D. Chapman. And I'm better at Twitter lately than I am blogging because I just – I'm a little worn down by writing, but usually I'm blogging about China and the internet and spying. And I'm like the go-to spy guy lately because of The Ascendant and Assets. And I'm just fascinated by it. So,
and remember, folks, DrewChapmanAuthor.com, not DrewChapmanSanitationWorker.com. That'll take you somewhere else. That's just a bunch of trash. Drew, thank you so much for your patience in being here with us today. Really enjoyed the book. Looking forward to the sequel. Hope you'll come back and talk to us about that when it happens. And thanks for joining us, Mr. Media, today.
I will come back anytime, and I will wait as long as it takes. And thank you for having me.
Thank you very much.
The preceding presentation was brought to you by The Realm Network.